All right, well, good morning. I've been doing sermons a long, long time, and they still present certain struggles. I thought I had everything finished, and then this morning I thought I'd look over everything just one more time, and ended up scratching things out, moving things around, and still not real happy with it. So if, I just don't know. If things seem to be jolted at certain points, you'll know why. And I only got 3 hours of sleep last night, so I'm a little fuzzy, so that may contribute to some disjointedness as well. So I'm just preparing you. All right, that said, let's get into it. The last couple Sundays, hopefully you will remember, we looked at a number of scriptures that call on believers to help those in need, to imitate God's love, a love that is large-hearted and generous. I've been spending time on that. All of us in here, of course, are rich in this present world. And so this weighty charge that is given to the rich that we find here in Paul's letter to Timothy is one that, of course, would apply to every one of us. As we think of God's over-the-top generosity toward us, how he willingly and eagerly lavished upon us countless blessings, spiritual and physical and otherwise, and with this charge to imitate him that we looked at from Ephesians, then it becomes clear that our starting point or default attitude, if you will, should be that of, I am eager to help, willing and happy to, but first I need to make sure that I do it right. Rather than, I'm holding back unless I can be talked into it, I need to be convinced. Now, neither one is blind at generosity, write a check and hope for the best, but one begins with a spirit of willingness, and the other, however, with a spirit of reluctance. And last Sunday, then, we started to consider some of the warnings about blind generosity, and that's kind of where we're headed now. The tendency today is to simply see giving money as the answer to every need, and but we know from Scripture that God expects us to exercise discernment. And so the issue isn't whether to help or not, but how to help and what is the best way to help. Oftentimes, this takes more time and effort than just giving money. It's not as easy to work through this whole process of discernment. And in the end, it may require something from us even more precious than money, like our time or energy or use of something we own or maybe even sharing a room in our house. Could be all sorts of things. The fact is, not all poverty is created equal. People are poor for a variety of different reasons, and the answer to helping them starts with addressing the reasons they are poor in the first place. And if we help in the wrong way, then we could actually do more harm than good, hurt more than help. In fact, there are times when the loving thing to do is to not give the person money. That kind of goes against everything we've always been taught, but it really is the case. We finished the morning by listing out 9 common causes for poverty, and the plan was to spend time on those today. We just listed them last week, and so that's what we're going to be doing. We could easily spend an hour on each of these, but the objective is to simply familiarize ourselves with them and consider examples of how to bring relief in each of those situations. The causes are different, and so will be the solutions. And you will soon see that everything I'll be covering this morning will easily fit under the heading of common sense. And so it won't be necessary to treat any of these on this list all that thoroughly. But if you did miss last week or the Sunday before, it would be very helpful if you would go back to our website, listen to those messages. Today's material builds on that. And I spent a lot of time laying out the case that as followers of Christ, we are called to be selfless and sacrificial in our love toward others, willing and eager to share what God has blessed us with. And what I'll be talking about today has to be seen, must be seen from that light, from that perspective. If not, then what I'll be sharing today could sound a bit cold and uncaring. And at the risk of sounding overly redundant, let me say this yet again, and you'll be hearing it often. The issue isn't whether we will help or not. The issue is how we will help. So always try to keep that in mind. And we also need to kind of step back and realize that poverty is not limited to money and material resources. That's how we usually think of it. One can suffer a poverty of self-control, for instance, which can lead to a poverty of money, or a poverty of integrity, which can lead to perhaps loss of employment, and thus a poverty of money. A poverty of knowledge and or wisdom will lead to a poverty of material resources and so forth. And so many times what we're looking for here is the poverty behind the poverty. And along that line, there are types of poverty that are far worse than that of lacking the resources one needs. It is far worse to lack joy, compassion, peace, generosity, or to lack friends, happiness, reputation, relationship with God, salvation. Thus the saying, some people are so poor that all they have is money. The greatest poverty, of course, is the loss of one's soul, even if such a person has gained the whole world. The gospel itself is about God rescuing us from spiritual poverty and blessing us with life, life abundantly. Thus, the generosity that God has demonstrated to us is, again, a generosity that we are to demonstrate to others. So let's now work through these causes of material poverty one at a time. And again, there's different causes, and each requires a different approach. And the book of Proverbs, of course, can be very helpful in all of this. I'll be referring to some, but if you just go through the whole book of Proverbs, you'll see there's filled with many examples. All right, so one, some people are poor because they eagerly pursue, unwisely, any number of promises to get rich quick. Essentially, they gamble away what little they have. It may be actual gambling, or it could be foolish investments made on some promise that sounded convincing at the time. And there's no shortage of examples on this. Their love for money and aversion to earning it the hard way and impulsive nature to make rash decisions makes them, of course, quite vulnerable. They are easily duped. The problem is this has become their lifestyle, and they just never seem to learn. The appeal to get rich without having to work for it is just too great to resist. Proverbs 18:19, he who works his land will have abundant food, but the one who chases after fantasies will have his fill of poverty. Whatever the case may be, playing the lottery, hitting the casino, making unsound investments, buying into risky startups, whatever the promise, what these individuals need is not more money to throw into the fire, but financial training and counseling and help to break that addiction. The root problem here is a poverty of common sense and self-discipline. Now, granted, such a person may resist our efforts to get counseling and help with financial management and support on breaking the addiction and so on, but this is where our efforts really need to be. So as you can see here, there's nothing all that profound. This is just common sense stuff. But sometimes we might feel a little guilty for not giving someone cash, regardless of the situation. After all, it has been ingrained in us that this is what Jesus would have us do. I was, for instance, reading this week some church history on Oswald Chambers, the author of the popular book, My Utmost for His Highest, popular book written 100 years ago. And in this article, there was a story about how a drunk approached Chambers for some money, telling him about all the hard luck he had suffered and how he needs money for his kids' medicine and so on and so on and so on. And Chambers responded with these words to him: "I believe your story is all lies, but my master tells me to give everyone who asks, so here is my last shilling." So this is not unique. Probably all of us have done something similar for the same reason. But what we have to keep in mind is that many of the teachings of Jesus weren't intended to be absolute commands that apply universally to every situation without some qualification. More times than not, his intention was to correct our orientation, pointing out what our disposition should be: humility over pride, selflessness over selfishness, forgiveness over revenge, trust over worry, pursuing treasure in heaven versus treasure on earth, and so on. Generosity over greed and stinginess. Jesus told us to give, but there are other passages in the Bible that tell us how to give. And the fact that there are these other passages, that itself tells us that our generosity must be tempered with discernment. It is not to be blind. I think we all understand this. I mean, consider for a moment all of the qualifications that Paul put in place for widows to be helped. But yet there's a list. They must, you know, there's a number of check boxes. So would Jesus have approved of that? Well, obviously, because he was inspired by the Holy Spirit when he wrote that. Correct? So there's no contradiction here. All right, number two, another cause for poverty, and this one is similar, is undisciplined spending habits, a lack of self-control in indulging one's appetites. Many people, lots of people, most people buy things they cannot afford, and they just keep doing it. And they are coveting a lifestyle, a standard of living that is beyond their means. They eventually fall into a hole of debt that they cannot climb out of. At the root of this is a poverty of contentment. For some, just paying the interest and all the debt they have accumulated is beyond their means. And our own country is a fine example of this, just a remarkable example. This year, we will spend over $1 trillion just to pay the interest on the national debt, none of which will be applied to the debt itself. That's just the interest. That's $1,000 times $1,000 times $1,000 times $1,000 for just 1 year. The example of our nation, along with the eagerness of banks and car dealers and furniture stores and so on to loan out money, are just a couple factors that have created this careless attitude toward debt in our culture. For such individuals who fall into this trap, what is needed is, again, both education and a change of behavior, assuming, of course, that they are receptive to that. And quite frankly, they probably won't be receptive to that kind of help unless their situation drives them there. That is, when the suffering becomes too great. And we can inadvertently circumvent that if we just keep bailing them out. The third cause for poverty, very similar to the others, would be sinful habits. Some are poor because they are enslaved by immoral and corrupt practices, destructive habits that consume not only their resources, but also their very lives. Obvious examples would include the thousands of dollars people wastefully spend on supporting their addictions to drugs and booze and prostitutes and pornography and gambling and so on. These are addictions that bleed people to death, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and financially, and in some cases even physically. Because the root problem is sin, the answer, therefore, is repentance, a change of behavior. And deep down inside, they themselves hate this enslavement. They want the change. And so, again, the greater poverty they are suffering from here is obviously spiritual, not material. They lack something far greater than money. They lack the Lord. And our kindness, therefore, needs to be primarily evangelistic, leading them to repentance and discipleship. That said, offering some temporary immediate relief might, in some situations, be the appropriate thing to do as a way to get the process started, for instance. But the long-term solution involves a drastic lifestyle change, and we might have to help them, walk them through that and provide support. Which, to speak candidly, could be a whole lot harder to do than just giving them money and walking away, because that's often the easy thing to do. Number four, along that line, some people are poor because they are lazy and unreliable. They don't want to work. Okay, we're going to spend a little time on this one. They don't want to get a job and can't seem to keep any job that they might get. Any willingness they might have to work will be likely, there'll be all kinds of conditions. It has to be a job that they will enjoy, that pays a lot, that isn't demanding, has a boss like Mr. Rogers, allows for extremely flexible hours, come in whenever you want to and only stay as long as you want, and have coworkers who are all nicer than Jesus, you know. And even then, they will believe that they deserve something better. And with some, no job would be acceptable whatsoever. I mean, there's always some lame excuse why they can't work. And Proverbs provides a comical picture of this very thing. The sluggard says, "There is a lion outside. I will be murdered if I go out in the streets." That kind of stuff. Most who fit into this lazy category, actually, they don't need a job because they have learned quite skillfully how to work the system, the government, how to work various charities, churches, food banks, and so on, and of course the generosity of kind people. They know how to do it. And here we might want to remember the golden rule when it comes to poverty relief. Do not do for others what they can do for themselves. When we step in, we take away the incentive for that person to help themselves. And we end up making them even more dependent upon us and others, something that the Bible forbids. Keep in mind that the ultimate goal is not to simply provide them with groceries and utilities. The real goal in helping someone is to get them to function as human beings made in the image of God, who can take care of themselves and become contributing members of society. If we enable people to live unproductive lives, then we end up working against God's very design, his intended purposes for them. Parents who let their unemployed 30-year-old son live in their basements to play video games all day and mooch off of them for every meal and every need should take this to heart. God ordained work so that humans can worship him through their work. And God has designed it that we find fulfillment in this, a sense of satisfaction that contributes to a healthy self-esteem. We feel better about ourselves when we are productive. That's how God wired us. And many times our relief efforts short-circuit all of this. Paul writes to the Thessalonians, "For even when I were with you, we gave you this rule. If a man will not work, he shall not eat." We all know it. You know, he goes on, "We hear that some among you are idle. They are not busy, they are busybodies. Such people we command and urge in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the bread they eat." Firm words. And this, to speak candidly here, this is why I have some reservations about food banks and soup kitchens and drive-through food giveaways. Although it is possible to manage them responsibly, and certainly they do help many who are truly needy, they do nonetheless, by their very design, often contribute to this unhealthy dependence. Now, we seldom here at church get phone calls asking for assistance. We used to get a lot of them, not so much anymore. Perhaps word has gotten out on what to expect. I'm not sure. But at some point in those conversations, I would say something like this. And you're going to think me cold-hearted, but I'm just trying to follow what Paul wrote to the Thessalonians. I'll say something like this. "We have some brush that needs to be cleared out and piled up to be burned. We would pay you to do that. Are you interested? There's some trim on the outside of the church that needs painted. We have some weeds in the playground area that need to be pulled. There's more than 100 blue chairs in our auditorium that could be freshened up a little bit." You know, I have a list of these sorts of things. I've never once ever had anyone take me up on the offer. "Our youth ministers in seminary learning how to read Greek. How about giving the lesson this Wednesday night? You know, if it's a good lesson, we'll give you $100. Maybe you could do a lesson on the value of having a good work ethic, you know. Here, I've never said that one, but caustic sarcasm. "Here, our kindness to them is to encourage them to work by not taking away the greatest incentive for working." And what is the greatest incentive to work? Starts with an H. Hunger, okay? Our part in all this could be that of, you know, our part in this, in helping them, could be that of hiring them for short-term projects that need to be done, and in the long term, helping them find a job. There are jobs to be found. Lots of places are hiring. You know, they might not be high-paying jobs. They may not meet all the conditions that the person wants, but there are jobs that pay. Number five, another reason for poverty would be false beliefs, holding to a worldview that actually generates poverty by its very ideals. And there are a number of examples of this. For instance, in some countries, there is plenty of food for all who are hungry. However, the food is off limits because the culture is steeped in these false religions like Hinduism that believe in and teach reincarnation. And there is actually a region in India where rats, for instance, that spread disease and eat precious food are not only a protected species allowed to live and breed out of control, but are actually given grain to eat, grain that could be used to feed their starving children. This because the souls of these rats, it is believed, are the loved ones who have passed away. It's craziness. Many cultures that are influenced by Hinduism will, of course, not eat cows and a number of other animals. They could be raised in, these cows, you know, these animals could be raised in farms to feed thousands, but are instead venerated as reincarnated loved ones. False worldview. Along this line, there are some cultures that are what we call fatalistic. People have been led to believe that the universe has destined them to live in poverty and that they should not try to change that destiny. Another example could be one of those wacky cults where members are expected to give most of their earnings and all their, or most of their earnings and possessions over to their leader. And he enjoys his extravagant lifestyle at the expense of everyone else. This because of the false belief that he is the chosen one of God. So lots of examples you might want to consider, for instance, how Islam contributes to poverty. Ultimately, the answer to all these would involve a conversion to the truth, to principles taught in the Bible, to a Christian worldview, which would allow them to take advantage of everything God has intended for our well-being. And so here again, our kindness to the needy would be, for instance, to support educational and evangelistic efforts in those cultures and situations. That at least is the long-term solution that should be, you know, that we should be investing in and working toward. Here's another cause for poverty along the same lines. Some are poor because they are oppressed by others who are taking advantage of them. This would be true of many in developing countries who live under the tyranny of corrupt governments. It doesn't matter how hard they work or how responsible they are with managing their finances and possessions, they are victims of extreme taxation or are in other ways pillaged by those in power and they can't do anything about it. Even here in America, we might think of those who live in neighborhoods under the control of gangs or mom and pop businesses forced to pay protection to the local mafia and so on. Included in this group would be those who have become victims of unjust lawsuits and those who have had their property and assets seized by the government for unjust reasons. Another example, James, you will recall, warns employers about exploiting their workers. The popular country song by Tennessee Ernie Ford, 16 Tons, is all about, you know, coal miners and coal haulers being paid in vouchers instead of cash. Vouchers that could only be used at the store owned by the local coal company. The system ripped off its workers one way or the other, and communities in the Appalachians suffered poverty as a result. It's a common practice 100 years ago. Fortunately, it has been banned. But the problem itself of greedy employers remains. Not all, but many. Whatever the reason for the oppression, the root poverty here is one of human rights. What the victims of this corruption need isn't necessarily money, although that would be helpful in the present need, but the greater here would be advocates who will help them get justice. That's the long-term real solution. People who will come along their side and be a relentless and powerful voice. And perhaps part of that would be to financially support legal representation for them, or that so that they could either appeal to higher authorities or to work to revise the system. You know, I would imagine that over the past few years, a number of us here received fundraising letters on behalf of Jack Phillips. If you remember him, I did. That I think this is a good example of that. That of sending contributions to ADF, American Defending Freedom, Alliance Defending Freedom, who could give him the best representation in the courts. Jack is just one example. Many of our brothers and sisters in the Lord who have done the right thing have stood to lose everything that they have had and face a life of poverty if they lose in the courts. And we should be about helping them with those legal bills. But these sorts of efforts, you know, the whole gamma here to secure justice for those who are wrongly oppressed, whatever their situation, it's seldom quick and easy. The battle is long and hard, but they need advocates who will come alongside of them. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right. Seek justice, encourage the oppressed, defend the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Psalm 82:3, defend the cause of the weak and fatherless, maintain the rights of the poor and oppressed. So applying pressure with phone calls, letters, you know, whatever avenues we have available to us, even public demonstrations. In the meantime, while efforts are being made to get justice, it would, of course, be appropriate to provide tangible help for those who are suffering from that injustice. So while we're at it, just a quick word about those who suffer poverty because their country is committed to the ideals of communism, would kind of fall under this. Under communism, there is, of course, no such thing as private property. Everything is owned by all the citizens of the state, at least in theory, and each person receives a portion based on his or her need. For such a system to work, it requires a strong central government, big government, to control all aspects of economic production, and to provide citizens with their basic necessities, including food, housing, medical care, and education. It's all controlled by the state. So you know the saying, from each according to his ability to each according to his needs, the iconic words of Karl Marx, the father of communism. Now, all this can sound quite appealing to some. Seems to be, you got quite a promise here of utopia. But the fact is, it deprives people the fruits of their efforts and leaves them with little or no incentive to work. We've seen this to be the case. However hard you work, whatever you achieve, whatever value you create, none of it will improve your quality of life. It is based on false promises. And that's the only way that it has been able to sell itself, on these false promises. Now, Christians will be limited in what they can do for those suffering in countries that have adopted communism. A long-term solution would require, of course, an overthrow of the government by its citizens. But in the meantime, supporting relief organizations that work in these countries to help the poorest members might be our only option. Number 7, you get a free civics lesson out of all that. Some people are poor because those who should be providing for them are not. When addressing the guidelines on how to provide for widows in the church, Paul tells Timothy that the relatives of such widows, not the church, are the ones who are primarily responsible. And if they don't assume that responsibility, they are worse than pagans. Listen to what he says. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents, for this is pleasing to God. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives and especially for their own household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Those are profound words. And so in this situation, the remedy is pretty simple. Church leaders, or for that matter, the whole church membership, should exert pressure on those relatives to do the right thing. If the relatives are not believers, then the church is going to be limited in that. But this approach, according to Paul, is the first step to take when it comes to those who have legitimate needs. The relatives need to walk up to the plate. And a few verses later, Paul explains that when relatives do their part, the church will then have the resources it needs to help those who don't have that support network of relatives. Number 8, and then there are those who are not poor but pretend to be to get a free handout. And we just call this for what it is. They are scammers. Careful discernment is called for. We probably have all been scammed at some point. And so we are all inclined to be a bit skeptical. Unfortunately, the people who are hurt the most by these scammers are those who have legitimate needs. And so again, we have to be, remember to be charitable and guard ourselves against this mindset that every request is a scam, because that's not the case. That said, we do have to, on the other hand, realize that when we give to someone who pretends to be needy and isn't, that we are enabling them in their sin of exploiting others. Excuse me. So during the days when everything was shut down because of COVID, a number of towns had food giveaways. I think some of these are still going on today. I'm not sure, but cars line up as volunteers hand out boxes of groceries. And there'd always be lots of cars. We'd see this on the news. And have you ever taken note of those cars? What people were driving? I mean, they'd get in line. These would be nice cars. Expensive SUVs, new and shiny, four-wheel drives, full cab pickup trucks, recent model sports cars, state-of-the-art luxury cars, all lined up, one after another. It was just amazing to see this. Don't people have any self-respect? Are these the people these charities had in mind to help? And yet the volunteers, they would smile, hand them those groceries out every time. I watched this on the news, saw it here locally in Marco, just shook my head. We had these food drives in Marco. I think the same cars I saw in the news lined up in Fort Wayne showed up in Marco the next day. And probably everywhere else. I'd love to be one of those volunteers handing out groceries. The organization in charge would ask me to leave after the first couple cars, but I'd make the most of it as long as I could. Nice ride. Trade you this block of cheese for it, And this all brings up another point. let's say that we have someone who is short of cash and can't pay his utility bill that is coming due at the end of the week. Why is it off limits for us to suggest that he sell something to generate that much needed cash? To even hint at something like that today would come across as cold and uncaring. But I had to do it a few times. I'm sure a number of you had to through your lives. I remember being unemployed when I was in my mid-20s and struggling to pay bills due to the major recession thanks to the Carter years. I was a brick mason and everything, the whole economy just stopped cold. And I needed some dental work done, but I didn't have a dime. And was already maxed out on loans. And what I did have was a collection of Morgan silver dollars that my grandfather gave me on my birthdays during my childhood years. And so I sold them. I didn't want to. They had sentimental value. But I did because I needed the dental work done. Many times, not always, but many times, those who are seeking help have what they need. And so the rule has to kick in. Do not do for others what they can do for themselves. In so doing, we hurt them more than we help them. You know, there's always a way to find a few extra dollars, you know. Cancel that Netflix subscription, save $100 a year. That Apple Music, that's about $150 a year. What about that gym membership? Amazon Prime? How about those, you know, that deal you got from the car wash about unlimited trips for a monthly fee? Find a cheaper barber, hairdresser. Get your spouse to do it. I mean, whatever. These situations, you know, we would serve well to push them on it. And so another question that I get into when people call our church and you know, for help ties into this very thing. I'll say something like, it's not our policy to just hand out cash, but we will be glad to buy something you have that might be useful to us. Do you have any theology books? I've never asked that. But I will ask them if they have a television or a Blu-ray player or a video game set up. You know, I don't know what we would do with it, but or a collection of DVD movies or a collection of music CDs, or do you have any silver dollars? Do you have any bottles of booze, cartons of cigarettes, marijuana? I'm sure we'd find a use for it. Just kidding, strike that. All right. Finally, this one. There are those who are poor because the fact is they really do lack money and other resources, and there really isn't anything they can do about it. Their needs are legitimate, and they are unable to help themselves. They need our help, and we should be willing to respond with compassion. It may involve food or clothing, a place to live, cash, whatever. And this is what's going to be occupying most of our attention from this point on in this series, legitimate needs. I would, however, tend to say that, generally speaking, this would be a limited group. They would include some of the mentally and physically disabled, some of the elderly, some widows, some orphans, some victims of natural disaster, some mothers with young children whose husbands have deserted them, some who suffer from medical conditions that result in huge expenses and or loss of employment, some who live in economically depressed areas of the world where employment is scarce, some refugees and victims of war-stricken areas, and those who suffer other unexpected hardships. You might even think of like the famine in Jerusalem and how churches in Macedonia reached out to help them. Some here only need temporary help. Others need something more long-term. In our society today, especially here in America, just to lay it out, a number of these people would qualify for some sort of government assistance. And some, depending on the situation, are also covered by insurance and have relatives who step in, as it should be. But even with this assistance, what is provided can sometimes be inadequate. And these are opportunities for us. However, in these situations, wisdom and discernment is still crucial. How exactly will we help them? And for how long? And how will it be administered? And what is our long-term goals here and objectives? And how can we help them without causing them to lose their own self-respect? You know, make them overly dependent on us or others? Is there a way to help them without compromising their mission before God as stewards of his creation? You know, these can be tough questions. And we'll get into this more in the weeks to come. So again, with all nine of these, the issue isn't will we help, but rather what is the best way to help? If the primary cause of poverty is a lack of knowledge, then the answer is to educate. If the primary cause is oppression by powerful people, then the answer is to advocate for justice. If the cause is due to sinful habits, laziness, foolish spending, and so on, then the answer is a change of behavior. And the first step to that was probably going to be evangelism. It's not that these people in any of these categories don't deserve to be helped. The issue is that if we don't address the reason for the poverty itself, then we could do more harm than good. And if the primary cause of poverty is a lack of material resources, genuinely, then the answer is to share our resources with them, money, food, clothing, homes, whatever it might require. For in so doing, we honor the Lord himself. So next time, and that'll be 2 weeks from today, we're going to talk about motives. You know, sometimes our desire to help someone in need isn't really out of genuine compassion, but rather something else, and we're going to want to talk about that. We'll also get into the three major ways to address poverty: relief, rehabilitation, and development. Each are different, yet each are essential, and many problems can arise when we fail to discern in a given situation which approach should be taken. And then third, who in our community is the most poor and the least able to help themselves, and how do we go about helping them? And eventually, I want to get into guidelines on choosing charitable organizations to support and some thoughts about something like short-term mission trips. So, all right, so let's have the musicians come forward, and let's stand if we would.